We take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And tonight we are looking at the Blake 7 episode, Moloch by Ben Steed. Moloch, Moloch, Moloch.
Well, thank you. Good night.
I hope you'll join us all again next time on Fusion Patrol. Now, I really would like to stop this right here, but we have an obligation, a duty, a sacred trust. Indeed, someone has to do this, and it's fallen on us. There are those who serve and those who are called, and then there's those who are just drafted horribly into this mess.
Like me?
Yeah. All right. Oh, let's try this again. Moloch by Ben Steed. The Liberator has been following Servalan for 27 days into the outer darkness. They don't know where she's going, but appears that she's going nowhere. And then her ship disappears. The Liberator almost crashes into an invisible planet. On the planet,
that they can see,
are the remains of the Federation's 5th Legion, long known for their penchant for women, food, and inflicting pain. They crashed on the planet during the war and have enslaved the population, and are recruiting additional legionnaires from the nearby prison planet. They've ostensibly called Servalan here to see something, but in reality, they want her star cruiser. The planet has a piece of technology called Moloch that runs the planet and also controls these matter copying devices. Anything that can be scanned can be duplicated on this planet, and they're already copying her starship to create a new 5th Legion fleet. Tarrant and Villa attempt to get aboard the troop carrier coming from the prison planet and succeed, but Villa is discovered and, rather than being rumbled, is taken under the wing of one of the prisoners. Tarrant is later captured and his mind is scanned for duplication by the replication machines. Servalan, of no further use to the 5th Legion, is given to the men for their enjoyment. Trust Villa's luck, he's the man she's given to. Together, they try to escape, with Servalan doing all the heavy lifting. Well, killing. Then, double-crossing Villa, and leaving him behind. Aven and Dana come down to sort things out. Aven realizes that Moloch isn't a machine, but a man, evolved by the matter copier into a representation of the future of the human race. Moloch, with the Liberator, now plans to leave the planet. He fakes Terran's voice and is teleported up by Kali, only to die in the process. The crew runs. I think we may have tipped our hands slightly in the
Little sequencing. Maybe.
I'm just going to say right now, okay? I don't know how much research you did on this episode, but we are not going to talk forward on this podcast. So if there's anything you know about the future, we are not going to talk about this.
No.
So, can you describe Moloch in one word?
Muppet.
Muppet. I was thinking of the episode rather than the character, but Muppet's fine. Good. I was wondering if you were going to come up with misogynistic.
Well, that's
the story
too.
As a whole.
It is.
Because this is one of the most misogynistic stories I've ever seen on Blake 7. And the only one I can think of off the top of my head, that's worse, was The Harvest of Kairos by Ben Steed.
Go figure.
Think we got a pattern going here.
Definitely have a pattern.
And it's funny because this may be the first time. I don't want to say that, but I'll say it anyway. This may be the first time that the pattern really came to me. Because, you know, there are other things that you hear over the years, like Robert Holmes stories always likes the double act. And you hear these things, and then you look at the stories, and you go, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I see that.
I see that totally, right? As opposed to a perceptive analysis of your own reading of Robert Holmes' stories. I'm sorry to say that I've come to this conclusion about Ben Steed on my own, rather than having read that somewhere.
You know, it's interesting because I didn't. I did look at his writing credentials, and I noticed that he was he is quite the prolific TV writer.
Mm-hmm.
How I missed that he had also written, you know, done other work for Blake Seven, just escaped me. I don't know how I missed that.
Yeah.
Because the only thing that I recognized of his work was some writing for Coronation Street, and that's it.
You know, I don't watch Coronation Street, but
well, I don't either.
I could see a lot of slapping women around there.
Well, yeah, I can too. Seems, it's a soap opera.
I mean, maybe EastEnders a little bit more, but we can take the possibility there. So there's more than just the theme of the misogyny. Yeah, misogyny. That's right. In this story, there's also Mulock. What is he? Apart from a Muppet, he's the extrapolation of the future of man.
That really, when I saw that, I mean, the first thought that came to my mind was, being that this is a Terry Nation series, I immediately thought of the Khaleds.
Mm-hmm. But there's also another thing here. It's like, Avon says it, you know, what you don't use, you lose. That's evolution.
Yeah.
Mulock is this sort of retrograde, pale. Meh. You know what the opposite of him is? Jarvik from Harvest of Kairos.
The manly man, exactly.
Building with your hands and feeling the sun at your back. They are the opposite. It's almost like Ben Steed has this range of tropes that he likes, which is computers bad, people who use computers are kind of wimpy. Obviously, women are there for
men's pleasure. At best,
we'll call that pleasure. Yeah, this goes over that line, way, way over the line. I mean, everything we ever complained about with the way Jarvik treated Servalan in Harvest of Kairos, where we could pretend if we wanted to that she was playing him all along. Here, no, that's not what's happening here. This is a power and sadism and you know, that line from Villa's Pal where he's like, oh, we get to have wine, women. And the guy says, yeah, my problem was always the women. And Villa's like, oh, you like them? No. It's like, oh, my.
Ew. I know.
Oh, dear. That's dark.
Yeah.
That is really dark. And they make him sort of a sympathetic character. They make him a kind of nice pal to Villa.
Yeah. So, but there's nothing that nice about him to begin with.
No.
No, he's.
But he's sort of a. He's
they play him
a
that
sympathetic
way.
Character in this episode than
yeah.
anybody else. I. Oh, made my skin crawl watching this one.
I don't know. I felt like my IQ points were dropping minute by minute while watching this one.
It's not a good episode. I'm just.
Oh,
we haven't made.
Oh that no,
clear. It's not a good episode. But let's try to talk through some of the.
Oh God, I was afraid you'd have to say that.
Yeah. Let's set aside some of the dark stuff and let's talk about the. And you can't see the air quotes, but let's try plot of this.
What plot?
Liberator investigates mystery. Mystery turns out to be matter replicator. Problem solves itself, Liberator leaves. That plot?
There it is. Well, you've just done it.
I've just done it. The outer darkness. So, now, we had a discussion a couple 3 weeks ago. I don't remember when it was. Probably last Blake 7 episode, where Tarrant made the comment, and we picked up on it, that said, with the rate Servalan's rebuilding the Federation, right? Remember there was that implied... Oh, yeah, it must have been an Ultraworld because we were having that debate between whether or not they should go or whether they shouldn't go. And in Terrence's defense, they were supposed to go because they needed to make sure it wasn't a weapon that Servalon could use, because in her rebuilding of the Federation, because it was moving so quickly, which, as we had discussed, doesn't seem to be consistent with what we've seen on Children of Auron or any of the episodes, where it seems more like she's got a ragtag bunch of stragglers left behind, right? And here we are again in this episode. Her fleet is obviously not very good, because she traipsed 27 days across the Outer Darkness to find something to try to tip the balance and rebuild the Federation. So we're back to that. The Federation is struggling, I think.
Right.
I don't know that it's going anywhere, but it's, you know, it's that inconsistent picture we've been getting on and off throughout Series 3. And here we're explicitly told that it's kind of manky. Which, by the way, is a Pokemon.
Is it?
Manky is, yes.
It's okay, I'll take your word for
sort
it.
Sort of a... It looks a little like a... let's see, what would be the word? Monkey. Yep. Anyway... So we've got a hidden planet, which, what was the point of that?
I don't know.
And they're isolationist.
Right. But what, again, what's the point?
There's sort of a statement on Oryx's part that implies that they're obsessed with their purity, or they're obsessed with their future, right? And based on his setup, it sounds like that the people of this planet... He doesn't say this, but in other words, based on what we find out Moloch to be, that the people of this planet are the ones that created Moloch as part of their plan to see what their ultimate evolution was.
Mm-hmm.
And yet at the end of the episode, we find out it wasn't them that did it. It was the head of the Fifth Legion, who's now in a tank because he was displeased, Moloch or something, that he did it, that he's the one that actually ordered the thing. So... why are we given that? I think it's bad writing, but, you know, why would Oryk know about it?
Well, because he's Oryk.
So he's tapping into their computers. Why didn't he just fix this for them?
Because he's Oryk. It's just a question of which Oryk are we talking about?
The one that's all-powerful at tapping things, but not all-powerful for doing everything else.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm guessing there's not two Oryks on that ship.
Oryk 1 and Oryk 2.
Yeah, Oryk 2 is just snarky. Oryk 1 is helpful.
Funny you should mention Oryk too. I'll tell you a funny story, because we're, you know, having trouble filling up the padding here.
Oh, no. Please.
It's not actually a funny story.
I'm just dying here.
You know, years ago, I used to run bulletin boards, BBSs. Actually, when they were BBSs.
I remember them.
And my oldest one was a Crunchy Frog, which was a philosophy discussion board in Monty Python. But following on to that, I moved on to one that was largely computer-oriented, about OS2, if you remember that operating system.
Oh, yes, I do.
Well, I used to run the bulletin board off of OS2, and the bulletin board's name was Oryk2.
You know, I remember that.
It's been a long, long time since.
Well, I remember you showing it to me.
It existed. It was there. It was even in a book on OS2 once. It's like printed in there somewhere with a phone number that is so wrong. I'm sure there's people dialing up right now at 600 baud trying to get in there for more information about the OS2 operating system. And it's not there, folks. It's gone. Anyway, oh, the old days. Back about the time Blake 7 was actually, you know, contemporary. maybe not quite that far back.
Not that far back.
But getting close. Getting darn close. Okay. It just seemed like that. It was just Oryk is typifying it as the people of the planet. We're trying to figure out their ultimate evolution. But then in the end, we find out it wasn't the people of the planet. It was the captain of the Fifth Legion. And why did that make any difference at all? No, you see what I mean? It doesn't really matter who did it.
No,
so why
it doesn't.
Did they change it mid-program?
I don't know. I found myself puzzling over that one, too.
Okay. We've got the Fifth Legion. There's an internal power struggle, which we didn't see. They took over from the captain, his somewhere down the line subordinates. They're the sadistic people running the planet now. Don't see any reasoning for that.
Mm-mm.
doesn't seem to have any kind of tie in the plot. And we have some scenes with Tarrant and Villis. Tarrant beams over, so does Villa, to this troop transport, and they're supposed to land behind a door. And then Villa, being the expert, is supposed to unlock the door. But somehow, this time, the teleport doesn't work and puts one on one side of the door.
And one on the other.
Villa being on the outside, in with the prisoners. And then that's where he gets taken under the wing of the guy whose name I can't remember. Don't even want to remember, but the one who
doesn't
like women.
It's so, yeah, he doesn't like women, but he really reminds me of that one oaf of Mice and Men.
Lenny,
thank you.
There's a little bit of that. He's kind of dopey. He's big and friendly. I mean, he really takes Villa under his wing. Just you don't worry. If somebody complains, you just say you're with me and I'll fix them. I mean, he's kind of likable, except that he's an incredibly sick character.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, I'm all for a nuanced character, but really that's...
What? No. Nuanced? Him? there's nothing nuanced about that guy.
Well, let's say he's not just a one-note character, he's a two-note character. He's a sick killer.
But a really likable guy at the same time.
Likable guy at the same time. I mean, as long as you're not a woman, he's probably good. Tarrant, Villa does enough work that Tarrant's able to get himself out of the thing when the ship transports. So Villa's taken off to be indoctrinated into the 5th Legion because they just think he's another prisoner being brought in from whatever the planet was. And the prison planet. That, again, is somewhere out here near the Outer Dark, which is 27 days. Because I think that's... Isn't that... They're fairly close to it, aren't they? It seems like we are flying past it, and then they're saying, no, she must be going to this prison planet. And then suddenly Callie says something to the effect, no, she's just gone
just
on
went
by
right
it.
By it.
And then pretty much she disappears. So that means that the prison planet is fairly
gotta be close
to this invisible planet that's in the outer darkness, which is at the way edge of the galaxy. And I ask myself about the penal practices
of having
the Federation.
Something that far out.
It was bad enough that it was, what, 6 months out to Cygnus Alpha, but now we are talking about something that is massively, massively out on the end, where it would just be easier to kill these people. And it seems like they're the kind of people you might want to do that to, rather than waste your time shipping them out there. But that is the universe of Blake 7. Tarrant tries to catch up with Villa and get him back on board at gunpoint. Thank you, Tarrant, you jerk.
He's another one of these characters that I get the feeling they have no idea how to write this guy.
No, from one to the next, he is just
he's all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've complained a little bit about that when it came to Villa. I mean, there are times where Villa is barely tolerable. There are times where he is just like the most obnoxious, whiny person in the entire show, to the point where all I could just do was scream at my television, "Shut up, Villa!" But Tarrant, wow! I mean, it's almost like they're writing somebody who has split personality disorder.
Speaking of, okay, well, let's talk about the scene where he pulls the gun on him. So he pulls the gun on Villa, and he says something to the effect, Villa says something to the effect of, I didn't write it down, but, you know, I mean, if that's what it's going to come down to, Tarrant, what's the point? Right? I mean, he's basically kind of shaming him, or trying to.
Right.
I don't think we see what happens next.
No, we didn't.
We just see that they're no longer together.
Right. Like, there was something filmed and then cut out or something. It's very odd.
Yeah. I mean, was it supposed to be a bit of tension? Did Tarrant really shoot him?
No, we can only hope.
You know, or, because I think the next thing we see is Tarrant by himself, and then he gets captured. So, I think. I won't swear to that, but it didn't build any tension in my mind. So, I don't think that worked. If it was supposed to do something, it didn't do a very good job of it. Big shock there in this episode. Here's another split personality one. They're flying through space. 27 days they've been following Servalan, presumably with their detector shield
turned on.
And everybody doesn't want to continue. Everybody but Aven.
Right.
They're out that's in the a little of nowhere. She's flying along. It's like, oh, she must be dead. The ship must be dead. They're all flying into space. Whatever. Now we better keep following her. Until she actually gets somewhere. And then suddenly everybody wants to check it out. And Aven's like,
I
think we're good. Let's go. Let's leave on that one.
Yeah, well, wasn't it the very, very close brush with death that made Aven say, I'm good up here.
It was the it wasn't the close brush with death. I mean, that was probably helped, but it was the fact that the technology was so advanced.
All right.
I think, which is basically exactly what happened at Ultra World. It was the technology that made him not want to investigate. Which is kind of the exact opposite, you'd think, from Aven. You'd think he'd want to investigate the cool technology because he's like the IT guy.
Yeah, but he's also highly pragmatic and is really big on survival without the Villa whininess.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily have a problem with them playing that angle.
Except that just the flip the switch. I mean,
it was pretty abrupt.
You've come this far. Surely you're going to do further investigations. Oh, she found a planet that's invisible. Let's go. That would be possibly a dangerous thing for us if the Federation ships were completely invisible and undetectable.
Yes, I mean, and Aven makes this big speech early on in the episode anyway, stating that the reason of pursue Servalan is if she's going out here, it's for a reason. And for us, for Aven all of a sudden to get squeamish... You know, to get cold feet on that, just because the technology is superior, does, under these circumstances, seem more than just inconsistent.
And the other thing is, that it just occurred to me, I think they said that it blocked all, I don't know, let's say medium band communication. I can't remember whether it was medium or short or long band communication, but it was one of the bands. It blocked all wavelengths, which is why they couldn't see it, why they couldn't detect it, why they couldn't teleport through it until the end of the episode when they needed to teleport through it. Then they could do that after they decided that you could be beamed through as long as you adjusted your bracelet. So why didn't they just adjust the bracelet in the first place, beamed through? All right. They need to get Villa on board the ship so he could meet his friends, so that they could do the thing. And very bad. But why didn't the Liberators, because one of the premises is that they went through and, oh, darn, we were definitely seen. And what do you think so? Really? Yes, I'm positive we were definitely seen. Orak, were we seen? Oh, yeah, you were seen. Right? Came through. Their detectors got them. We know that. Now, what we don't see is on the planet is one of the beautiful girls who is one of the natives of the planet has notice that, thinks, ooh, maybe it's an alien coming to save us, erases the recording thing, and is immediately captured by the Legionnaires and basically turned over for rape fodder as her punishment, as they later do with Servalan. But why didn't the detector shield prevent that from being detected? And the Liberator went through.
I have no answer for that.
Because they had it they must have had it turned on if they'd been following Servalan for 20 right. days.
And they know that, and they knew full well that they were undetected, because I think that question was even asked. Has she spotted us? No, she hasn't. So,
because would she continue traveling if she had spotted you? It's like, yeah. So there is one character in this story that came off so much better than the others. And this is a first. Callie got the prime role in this episode. She wasn't hit much.
No.
She didn't have to go down to the planet.
She wasn't mentally possessed.
She wasn't mentally possessed. She didn't have any lines. And she presumably got paid for this job. And she didn't have to do anything. Now, most times I'd be upset if I were an actor. But in this case, I think I'd be upset if I had to work on this one. So I think she made out like a bandit on this one. trying to put the bright side. Like, you know, hey Jan, throw you a bone. I know you haven't been in the last 25 episodes much, but...
And when you have been, you've been taken over.
That's right. But in this one, we're going to do you a favor. You're not in this one much.
but the parts that you've got are really good.
Yes. Yes, you get to push the teleport buttons like you always do, and you get to react to the dead Muppet, I think. Did we even see her react to the dead Muppet?
I don't remember. I think we did.
I think we did.
Yeah.
That was some subtle acting on her part if she did, because we don't remember it for sure. Man, this one's tough. I guess I should point out at this point that, and we don't like to go forward with spoilers, and I'm not going to do spoilers per se, but it was known by cast and crew and production team by the time they did this one that the series was over.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
Oh, see, I did not know that.
Yes. So, maybe this is indicative of we've just got to fill out some scripts and finish off our obligatory 13 before we go our separate ways. But it kind of feels like that. It kind of feels like, wow, where are the scripts that we couldn't do before? Let's do Ultra World. What was the one before that?
Oh, crap.
They're bad. They're really, really bad.
Sarcophagus.
Sarcophagus.
Yeah, there was a real run of just garbage.
Really bad episodes. And that's part of it is inconsistent characterization. I mean, we've got at least two episodes where Avon is like, let's do this. Oh, wait, no, never mind.
Well,
we've got episodes where Tarrant is the hero boy or the nasty jerk or somewhere in between. He bounces around.
And this is what you get when you start hiring outside writers. You don't have a writing staff.
They've lost their focus.
Right. Chris Boucher and Terry Nation weren't really doing anything for the show at this point.
All right, let's for the sake of having something to talk about. I mean, I think it's safe that we can tell people now. Blake went off. Gareth Thomas went off to do another job. And Blake 7 without Blake. You've cut the head off. You've cut the motivation. I mean, the first 2 years, it was all about Blake's obsession to defeat the Federation and sort of the friction that was created by the rest of the crew. And, you know, some more or less degrees. Gan was always with him. Avon was always kind of sort of with him-ish. But there was that...
Well, Blake provided the ideal.
He provided the goals.
Yes.
And their goals in this series have just been ludicrous. They're either, hey, let's do a little bit of pirating, like, as in Harvest of Kairos.
Right. Or hey, let's try and find Blake, because Avon was he had that mission to try and find Blake.
Early on once. And it just doesn't seem to be any kind of unifying force. And it has lost its way. The series has lost its way. And, you know, the way the BBC commissions programs, they're frequently done before they actually air. So it's a question of, you know, we're just doing a year's worth of shows and that's fine. And then, for whatever reason, they decide to make another year's worth of shows somewhere along the line. But here, you know, there's just not much to recommend. Series 3, A Blake Zone. I actually kind of, I hate to say it, but even though he's a jerk, I kind of like Tarrant. But he is such a jerk at times that it's very hard.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he could be the hero that Blake has left. Oh, because Blake was not a black and white hero. I mean, that's what's nice about it is that he had those sort of...
had those great moments.
And here we have Tarrant, who's almost the polar opposite. He's a jerk with those moments of being the hero. And not for the same reason that Avon has moments of being a hero. But because he apparently just at times has this code of conduct that he has to follow that's almost Boy Scoutish. It's like, well, we're not going to leave behind a crew member. And then suddenly it's like, where did that come from? You know, Aven would leave them behind. It's his thing, but he doesn't because, oh gosh, you know, actually I kind of need him to operate the console, so I'll go save him. There's his motivation for his moments of heroism. They are self, serving. But Terrence's moments of heroism are just suddenly like, I need to stick my jaw out and be the hero. And I, it's sad. It's sad because I love Blake Seven. And,
I did.
Until you started watching it for the podcast? Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I had much better memories of this series. But now that I'm watching it for the podcast and really looking at these episodes closely, I'm deeply disappointed, especially with this third season.
This third season. These are really kind of the low. You know, when people say, oh, the web, that's probably the worst episode of Blake Seven. It's like, oh, no. That was just kind of an awkward stumbling on its way up. Up through series one and series two. But no, series three has been sad. Why do people like Ben Steed get to write stories? You know, what is it that possesses this guy to make this theme? There's a theme. How do I put this? There's a little bit of high concept science fiction-y stuff here. You know, what happens in the future? What happens to your, you know, that is not just the space opera story of finding the matter replicator, wanting to create a new fleet, space criminals kind of thing. I mean, it's almost like it's tacked on.
Hmm.
But it's high concept science fiction as opposed to the other part. And yet it's just completely out of place here. I mean, Mullock could have been the computer, right? I mean, it could have just been the computer. There's nothing that really comes out of the fact that he's a computer redesigned future human. And the only thing that comes out of it is he's really easy to get rid of. He just teleports up to the ship. The ship doesn't recognize his life support system and he dies, which seems like a, seems like you'd arrive naked every time, or without a gun, or without your teleport brace. Well, maybe the teleport braces it would figure out, but it does. Or without the space cooler of lockpicking stuff that Villa carries. You know, all of those things. If it doesn't teleport up stuff that's not part of you, well, isn't a terrible idea.
I'm not even going to go down that road. I don't even know what to think about this episode. It gives me just a headache because it's, I mean, we're trying to desperately,
well, I had a headache for days.
Well, things, see, we're trying to rationalize all these things and little plot points and little discrepancies. We're trying to find some way to rationalize them so that they can fit in our little box of perfect orderly data. And the problem is that it can't, because it's so badly written by somebody who did not deserve to write for this show, that it just renders this attempt on our part meaningless.
That's true. We've written an episode that defies analysis. Well, you know, let's face it, Ben Steed probably needed some analysis. Psycho analysis.
Yeah.
Unless this is the way he gets his demons out, puts them on the page. You know, I'm going to... Let's be fair to ourselves. Let's be fair to our listeners. And let's call it. This one's done.
It's... Oh, please.
This one's done.
I mean, I was dreading doing this episode. Or at least recording this podcast after watching it. I was literally... dumbfounded, but after I watched Moloch, I mean, it does. It's interesting when you said it defies analysis. My exact words were, this episode defies description.
I don't know what they were thinking.
No clue.
Harvest of Kairos was bizarre.
Yeah, but this is just bad.
Yeah. So I'm gonna throw a bone out there then. Maybe my opinion will change. between now and when we record the podcast. But the next episode is Death Watch, and I've always liked it. I'd say it's one of my favorite from Series 3.
You know, and the thing is that
Blake 7.
There have been past Blake 7 episodes that I remembered enjoying a lot when I saw them until we did this podcast. And now it's like, I don't need to see those ever again. Same thing with Space 1999. It's like, oh, that was a really great episode. Why did we have to talk about it? See, now I hate it.
Well, we'll always have Man from Atlantis.
Which I have always disliked.
Well, see, we didn't ruin it for you.
No, because you can't go down from
man
rock
from
bottom.
Atlantis. We didn't ruin it for you.
No, we didn't ruin it for you because, I mean, that's about as low as the Marianas Trench.
That's our new tagline.
That's our new tagline, yeah. We didn't ruin it for you.
Well, Ben, it's been an interesting discussion of Moloch by...
Well, I'm so glad you didn't say it was a pleasure, because it wasn't.
It wasn't a pleasure, but it was an interesting experience.
Yeah, true. Quite. Oh, yes, that is true.
Listeners, we hope you've learned something. If you haven't watched Moloch...
Don't.
Yeah.
You miss nothing.
No.
It does not add to the... It adds nothing.
It really doesn't. It really doesn't. It's just distasteful.
That's a good word. Distasteful, and it doesn't. There is absolutely. I mean, I don't know without having seen Death Watch again, but to the best of my memory, there is nothing that carries over.
No,
from this episode, except the bad taste in my mouth.
We'll try some vodka. Vodka might do it.
With any luck.
Grain alcohol.
Yeah.
Grain alcohol. All right. Well, Ben, thank you for joining me.
Oh, a pleasure. No, it wasn't.
I know, it's a knee-jerk
reaction.
Listeners, I hope you'll join us all again next time on Fusion Patrol.
Not Cheers.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us? Please consider becoming our sponsor at patreon.com/fusionpatrol. We'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on iTunes. Stop by and visit us at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Search for us on Facebook under Fusion Patrol. Check out our Twitter handle, @FusionPatrol. Or just send us an email at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Please come join the conversation. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf.